Hello and welcome to The Trunk Show. I'm your host, Allison Howell, here to talk with leading professionals about their event rental businesses, hard-earned wisdom, and ongoing adventures in the industry. The show is brought to you by RW Elephant, mighty inventory management software designed to help you conquer the chaos in your event rental business and reclaim your creativity, because the world needs more of the beautiful events and environments you create. In this episode, you'll hear my conversation with Mandy Majerik, founder of Hot House Design Studio and Prop House Rentals and Styling in Birmingham, Alabama. Mandy tells us how, over the past two decades, she turned her small, third-generation mom-and-pop flower shop into the renowned Hot House Design Studio that exists today, while at the same time building a sister company, Prop House Rentals and Styling, to double-team the wedding and event industry across the Southeast. Mandy is a highly accredited veteran in the industry, a regular at London Gather, and has some great insights for us. All right, let's dive in.
My grandmother owned a flower shop, so I grew up sleeping in flower boxes, you know, after school, going down there, kind of picking up the blooms off the floor, making those little arrangements for my mom, you know, that kind of thing. And as I grew up, you know, just like in any family business, there's some child labor involved, especially for holidays. Just kind of was around it all my life, and I come from a family of entrepreneurs. So my mom took that business over after my grandmother was, you know, kind of done doing that, had it until after I graduated in college. And I did some work in the interior design field still while helping her. And then we just kind of had a roundtable family discussion that it was time that I take it over if I wanted it, because my brother had a baby. My mom was ready to be a grandmother. And so it was kind of like passing on the torch and kind of let me do what I wanted to do with it. So I took it from your typical mom and pop flower shop to more of a wedding and event floral studio. And when I took it over, the name of it was Bell Florist. So it was just your typical, what you would think of, you know, neighborhood florist would be. And when I took it over with my family and we had the big discussion, I was like, you know, number one, I want to move it. So I took it from a suburb of Birmingham and moved it straight to downtown. And then I changed the name of it. So I changed from Bell Florist to Hot House Design Studio. And so I kind of did both things, moved it out of the area, rebranded it, brought it into the new century. The beauty of it, though, was that I still kept the same phone number. And so the phone was automatically ringing when I opened up downtown. So I was still fulfilling the orders we had always done to keep the lights turned on and the bills paid, while I was then hustling, trying to get that new wedding and event client I was looking for.
Okay, so you had studied interior design, and so that's sort of the eye you came into the floral business with. Were you being inspired by other influences at that point too, or sort of what was fueling the creativity and the trend setting at that point?
I think that was just something personal too. It's just what I've always loved to be creative, and I've always loved that field. You know, to me, interior design really parallels the whole market with wedding and events. And, you know, people want lounge furniture and things like that at their events now. But, you know, they're also looking at what Crate and Barrel has or what they see in all of these advertisements. So, you know, when they're looking for that, it really does go hand in hand. So I think starting out, I knew that I loved interior design and I knew where I wanted that floral business to go. And so I think that was kind of bridging the gap. People needed to see and be able to touch and, you know, be able to get what they were seeing in the magazines or what they were seeing in those type of, you know, publications.
What year was this that you took over the floral business?
2006.
So 2006, you're taking over the floral business. You're coming in, you're really freshening up the look, and mm-hmm. the phone's still ringing so that you've got that bread and butter, but you're right. Really starting to do more events. Are you thinking all the time, hey, I'm going to start doing prop rentals on the side, or prop rentals part of the florals, or how did the props get to be part of it?
So when I was out doing the wedding and events, you know, I would have a bride who wanted a different kind of container. So instead of the bride coming in and me saying, here's three choices, you know, they may want black containers. And I thought, well, I don't have black containers. I'd love to have black containers. So I'm going to take the money they're paying me and buy some black containers. And so I really reinvested a lot back into the company. And so we really, you know, had tons of containers and candelabras and anything you think a florist would bring to the table back then for a wedding, I had. And then it just became where I had so much of those things You know, people would ask to borrow them, or, hey, you know, call Mandy. She probably has that or knows where to get it.
So you recognize this could be its own business rather than just under the florals. You kind of recognized, oh, this needs to be a separate brand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially when weddings in our market started wanting more furniture and more bar facades and things like that. There was no one here that was offering those type things. And I was kind of one of the trend forward floral designers and floral companies. And so I decided, hey, I'm going to buy some couple of pieces of lounge furniture and I'm going to make a couple of bar facades. I was quickly one of the go-to people here in the area to be able to offer those things. And so that was definitely when I was like, this needs to be its own business.
And that's because you recognized, hey, I'm going to be selling to the trade. So other florists, caterers, venues, that sort of thing. And they'll be more comfortable renting from a different business rather than a florist who's a competitor. Or tell me, could be, I see quite a few different models out there. And I'm always mm-hmm. interested in that kind of decision point. How did you decide two businesses rather than house it all under the same brand?
I think because the and anyone will tell you, it's not a hidden secret in the floral world, the profit margins are definitely not what they are in the rental market. We hustle in the rental market, but we don't hustle like a floral designer has to hustle on the day of an event.
Right.
And the long hours that are put in on that. And so, you know, personally, I was
a tremendous amount of labor on the floral
yes.
side. Not that there's not
yes.
labor in rentals, but it's a different
That's right.
kind of labor.
It is. It is. And for me, you know, the value of that was, you know, if I was the one who was selling the wedding to this client and they were worried about this was going to be the wrong shade of peach of these flowers, or you know, it was a guessing game because they didn't see the fresh product until the day of the wedding. It's like your one chance. But with rentals, you know, they know what that peach sofa looks like because they can come and see it beforehand. And so it also allowed me personally not to have to be at every event, and it allowed us the opportunity to scale and add different salespeople and things, because when you're doing the floral, people always wanted Mandy to be there. They just had that safety net that Mandy's there. She knows what I want. She can handle it. But with the rentals, they're happy having other salespeople on the sales team be their go-to. So I'm not having to touch every order that happens.
So it wasn't just that you liked buying stuff. It wasn't just that
Well,
you
I still saw, like that, but
it wasn't just that you saw there's an opportunity. It's also that sure. you recognize the rentals is scalable in a very different way than the florals. I mean, because
That's
the
correct.
Florals, it's not that you're just doing one wedding a weekend with the florals.
That's
you're
right.
doing a big volume with the florals, but mm-hmm. the rentals are scalable in a totally different way because they can be in more places at once without you personally having to be there. And
That's
because
right.
it sounds like the sales side is a lot more independent from you personally.
Correct. Yes. You know, I was looking for a way to set me apart and keep me kind of on the forefront of being the go-to person in the floral world in our market, because I was able to offer those things. And so that was really where I was in the beginning. But after we added more and more inventory, I realized, hey, this is, and I was there long enough to realize, hey, you know, this is where a lot of our profit margin, this is where a lot of our cash flow is coming from that's able to be retained. Because, you know, with floral, you're buying all the flowers and it's once and done. And obviously with the rentals, you're procuring these sofas, but you can use them multiple times as long as you take care of them well. So we definitely were able to see that difference happening the first, you know, few years of having it.
Well, and it is even interesting that you were able to invest so much in vessels and decor at the beginning when you were primarily doing florals, because your margins mm-hmm. are so small in mm-hmm. florals that it's easy to say, oh, well, let's get them to talk them into using a vessel we already have rather than right. reinvesting in inventory that you're not going to be using every single weekend. So how did you make those choices at the time? Like before you had the full-fledged prop house brand, how did you decide when am I going to make a purchase versus sub-rent from somebody else versus try to use something I already have? How did you kind of justify those purchases?
Well, I've always been a little bit of a risk taker. I think every entrepreneur is a risk taker. And I think being that I was younger, I was able to take a little more risk. You know, I was the only one counting on my paycheck. It wasn't a family. I didn't have kids. And so I was, that I think led to the reinvesting a lot of that money back into the company to buy the things. But I think too, it was just because I think that was some of the things that I liked about it, that I liked working with different vessels, or I liked having a different look every time and not having to use the same glass cylinders every time. And I really wanted to set myself apart from the other people. I mean, we had, you know, 15 or 20 floral companies here in Birmingham that did beautiful wedding flowers. So what made people want to come to me? And that was one of the advantages that I saw, as long as I allowed myself to reinvest some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. Well, so you were sort of pushing the trends in the florals. Tell me a little bit more about the market in Birmingham. Is there a big market for those early adopters of trends, or is it a much more traditional market? What's the landscape like?
So Birmingham, they are hospitality driven. So people love to throw parties here. And a lot of times when I would travel and speak about florals and teach people and do seminars, people would be like, "You're so lucky to be in the South. People in the South love to have a party." And and it's true. It is. I'm in a lucky region of the country, I think. But people really, they're traditional, but I think they want to be traditional with twist. I think they want to do something a little bit different. I think we have some clientele here that, you know, are looking at what's happening in New York or what's happening in California or Texas or a place like that, where people are introducing new props or different ideas for, you know, bars or back bars. And they bring us some of that inspo. So, you know, I think they just want to put their own twist on it, but they don't want to get too far out of the lines. But for the most part, I think we can push them a little bit.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's a receptiveness to your creativity. So as you're bringing in these props, you're not having to sort of fight tooth and nail to get somebody to actually rent them from you. It sounds like there's people who are ready and willing.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of it too, because of the background, we not only do we just rinse and repeat rentals, just typical lounges, but we also do design for the event. And so that allows us to incorporate some of those pieces that someone just might not say, "Oh, I want that right there." It's how we work it into their whole design plan to get it into the whole event.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that. Are people mainly coming to you for florals and then you're adding on the prop house stuff? Are they coming to you for design in general, and you're saying, "Here's your bill from Prop House and here's your bill from Hot House"? Like, how does it all work?
So it used to be the first way that you said it. Used to be people would come to us for flowers and then we would add in the props as the secondary piece of the pie. But now it's kind of the ship has sort of shifted, and people will come to us more for rentals than floral, because with everything you have to decide, you know, where are you going to put your focus? So we definitely decided it was, or I definitely decided it was better for me to focus on the prop house side of things. And we raised our floral minimums. And so now people, especially corporate, are coming to us to design their event. So we're designing the event, orchestrating, you know, sub-renting out from another company, the tents and what I call big box rentals, the chairs, shivari chairs, because we don't do that in-house. And so we're designing the event, and then we're bringing in our prop decor, our boutique props to make the look. And then the florals then are just the icing. So they're just the last thing that kind of sets it off that we do in-house for that.
Are you charging a separate fee for the design, or are they coming to you knowing that, oh, we'll get props and we'll get a concept?
That's where it kind of shifts when they can come in, and depending on who the client is and they sit with me, then we will have a design fee associated with designing the event. But if it's truly our sales team, just depending on the caliber, we'll offer as a little bit of concept without charging a design fee. So if they just know they want a lounge and they want a bar, a back bar, and maybe one other thing, you know, our team will draft up just a little concept page for them to make sure they can see the visual, they can see the picture. But when they come to me and we're bringing in designing the whole event, like the tents and all the linens and all of that, then that falls kind of under a different category with more time. So we do definitely charge a design fee for that.
How do the businesses work together? Do you share staff or do you have separate staff? Help me understand where the overlaps are.
We do share a little bit of staff, but we try to keep it separate. We don't do as much floral as we used to. So I use a lot of freelance florists when we have big weekends. I do have one floral designer that we count on to do a lot of the in-house corporate things that kind of tag along with props. But for the most part, I would say probably I'm the only one that is cross-referencing on both. And then, of course, our props are always a part of the wedding or the floral. So then our warehouse team and trucks and things like that will share, but for the most part.
So your sales team is bidding both the props and the floral?
Yeah, they come to me and say, can you do some flowers for this event we have into June? So they come and they make sure that we can handle doing it in-house. But yeah, they'll sort of prep it. And then they'll come with me with inspo and things like that and ask if we can do it. And then we price it together.
Separate accounting for both businesses?
Yes.
Okay. But the same space?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. At this point, it sounds like you don't give the businesses equal attention. It sounds right. Like Prop House has really taken more of your attention. And it sounds like you've made that decision strategically because of the profit margins, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my sanity. So, yes.
But you're not giving up floral. So that's an interesting strategy because you haven't said like, oh, well, it's not worth it to do. You still find that it's a good symbiotic relationship.
It is. And I think because especially designing the events, it helps us control that little bit of that creative factor that may go downhill quickly. And so I do like having the control of the floral when we're doing the overall event design.
It's kind of a long road from a retail floral shop to full event production, which is what you're mm-hmm. talking about when you're subrenting tents and tables and chairs and props and florals.
Right.
That's a big shift in responsibility.
Yeah, it is.
it's not just, okay, well, we're doing more things. It's mm-hmm. like the customer expectation is a lot higher, right? Mm-hmm. Because not mm-hmm. only do they expect the execution to be on point, they have an expectation that they're coming to you and you're going to have this creative concept just flowing out your ears, right?
That's right. They call it the Majeric magic.
Right. Yep, yeah. Yep. But beyond that, when things go wrong, you're accountable for more than just, you know, some petals that are brown.
That's right.
How do you sort of weigh the balance, the pros and cons of that? Like, at what point did you say, oh, it's worth it to kind of do all these things under our umbrella? That risk is worth it, because we can kind of control the end product more.
I think when I was made the decision that I would raise the minimum for floral and really push towards the props, I wanted to be a leader in that market in our area. And so I think, you know, being able to do the whole event design and incorporate or push new ideas on people, that was the avenue that I saw was the opportunity. Was to be able to take that, because I was really doing it anyway. And people were coming to me, even, you know, event planners, not all event planners or event designers. And so we had a lot of planners who were coming and asking my opinion, or, hey, can you help with this? Or, hey, can you help with that? And so, you know, on a wedding, I'm not a wedding planner and I don't want to be a wedding planner.
Right.
And I don't want to count RSVPs. Yeah, no, I'm not that. I don't want to be your best friend when it comes to that. But I do want your event to be very cool and executed well. And so I think from that perspective, that is where personally I was able to shine. And so I realized that, hey, this is for me. And I think it's very self-fulfilling when I get to do that concept from beginning to end. So I think for me, you know, it's a lot of liability and responsibility. But I think if it's me and I have the staff with me to execute it and make sure all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, then I feel really good going into the event. Then we're prepared and we really don't have any issues Weather is the biggest issue. But other than that, we don't really have too much.
Well, but you're not just doing events there in Birmingham. You guys travel, right?
We do. Yeah, I kind of laugh and joke and I'm like, hey, my trucks have wheels. So we will go wherever you want us to go. We'll take however much you want us to take.
So, you pretty much do events all over the South, right?
We do. Mm-hmm. We do a lot in Georgia. We've done Tennessee. We've been up to Virginia. We've been to Mississippi recently, Florida. So yeah, we kind of get around in our region.
And what do you think draws people from outside of your immediate area to hire you to those places? Is it your inventory? Is it your style? Is it your service? Is it the fact that you can offer so many different things and you're a little bit of a one-stop shop, not meaning that they don't have to think about it, but that you offer this kind of complete solution for them? What is it that draws them to you when there might be another solutions closer?
I think in our area, in town, it's driven because we are a one-stop sort of shop for these corporate clients. They want us to design the whole thing. When you get maybe out of state lines a little bit, I think it is more about the inventory that we have. Two things I think kind of stand out for me anyway, is we have things in numbers, we have things in collections. So we have 12 of one type sofa or 15 of one type banquet. So we can do a real overall design with the same things. We do things that are very custom. So we do a ton of custom building and custom painting. So people are really able to take something and make it match their event brand. Or what they're going for. And I know a lot of traditional rental companies don't do that. So we do offer the customization options.
Hey, fellow event rental adventurer. I'm going to pause the show for a minute and tell you a little bit more about the show's sponsor, RW Elephant. RW Elephant is mighty software that helps you manage your rental inventory, generate proposals, avoid double bookings, send invoices, gain powerful insight into your business's profitability, and more. It was designed, in part, by me for boutique event rental companies of all shapes and sizes. But you probably don't want to hear about how great it is from the person who helped create it. How about someone who's actually using it every day in their rental business?
We recommend using RW Elephant from the very beginning of starting your rental company. We didn't start using RW Elephant until 6 months into the business of getting started. And if we had had it from the very beginning, it would have made such an easier transition as we were growing rapidly to have that software.
I agree. I would also say, though, that if you have started a rental business and you don't have a software, just get it ASAP. It really will make things so much easier in the long run.
It's been so key to us as we have grown from nothing into a 3-location business.
My favorite thing, honestly, is the loading checklist for an order. I just think it takes the stress out of my job. And now it's just a really fun process.
You can find more information about RW Elephant online at rwelephant.com. Or you can find a link to the website in the show notes.
You're not a big box in that you're not standardized, but you're
correct.
Not a little
shop. I say
shop,
big box, so yeah, standard.
Right. But you're not a little shop in that you have the quantities. I mean, so you're kind of in a sweet spot there because there are a lot of boutique rental companies that have one-offs or maybe four of something, but they certainly don't have 12. That's a very unusual position to be in. And also the capability to paint and repaint or build and rebuild. There's, to be honest, only a couple dozen companies across the country that are in the position that you're in to be able to do that kind of work. I can imagine that there's a real demand for that in your region. Can you give us an idea of the scale of your operation? How many events are you doing in any given year?
Well, I will say we're just rolled off of May. We're closing the month out because we're doing this on May the 30th. And this is our largest month ever with rental numbers. So between will call and deliveries, we've done 106 events for the month of May. So that can be anything from a will call of a cake plate all the way up to, we're doing some things for some universities and things like that. So it varies from year to year based on if it was a floral event that came in or whether it was came in as a prop house event. It's definitely grown to be a successful business over the last, I would say, 5 or 6 years. you know, seven figures and higher in demand.
Yeah. And is this what you were imagining when you sat down with the family and said, okay, yeah, I'll take over Hot House, or I'll take over Belle Florals at that point?
Right, right, right. You know, I've always been motivated and I've always been driven and an overachiever. And I think in the end, would I think I would be over a staff of 30 people? I don't know. But I do know that I was very driven to make it something that was distinct and different. And I think I've just been sort of riding the wave going in that direction. And wherever there was an opportunity, I think I was like that risk taker a little bit, educated risk taker, to really dive into that sector, like the custom painting, the custom building, because that does add a lot of staff to be able to accommodate those requests. So, you know, my parents are super proud. You know, they're just like, we used to know what this was, but we have no idea now what all this entails. So they're super proud. And when they come to the showroom and they see the warehouse and they're just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, all this stuff. My dad laughs because my mom is a decorator at heart. And she used to have a little retail shop when I was younger. And she loves to collect things and decorate her house. And my dad laughs because he's like, you know, you're just like your mother. You just realize how to monetize everything, which is true. You know, like,
well, it isn't hoarding if you rent it, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I mean, you really definitely have played on your strengths, right? You recognize, okay, I don't like designing the same wedding over and over and over. So if I know I'm going to keep buying, I might as well start renting it to other people rather than keep buying and have it just sit on a shelf. Because Mandy, there are thousands and thousands of florists out there who kept buying and have been getting bigger and bigger storage units, but they're still not doing the same wedding every weekend. But they're not getting rid of their stuff either. And so there are people who have a storage unit or a warehouse worth of stuff that they could be renting, but they're not. And, you know, I think it is unique in that way, because as a creative entrepreneur, sometimes people chase that bright, shiny object, right? They chase that next fun thing, that next thing that's interesting to them, and have a hard time seeing how do I take advantage of the thing that's right in front of me. But it seems like you've been able to harness that.
Well, and for me, you know, I've always been a person who, you know, wanted to play nice in the sandbox with other business owners and have great relationships with other floral company owners in town. And, you know, they may have six of these vases, but they need 15 for this weekend. Well, more than likely, we probably have either the same thing or something very similar. And so they'll come and rent those. And so we rent out a lot. It opened up an opportunity when I did that, then to have a little bit of a better, you know, relationship with some of those people too, because we were sort of the getting place. We were the place who probably had it. And so it was a nice, interesting twist to something I didn't expect. It wasn't always about competition and things like that. And they would come to me and say, hey, we have this ceiling installation and, you know, what would you do, or what do you have we can use to try to do this? Because for them, it was a lot easier to rent it and our guys would help deliver it. And then, you know, everybody wins at that point.
Absolutely. Well, tell me a little bit more about how you lead your team. Are you setting goals for them, or are you asking them to set goals for themselves?
We set goals for them. It's kind of interesting because, you know, when you start out owning a floral business and you're like, oh, I'm going to start the props, and then we go into custom builds and you add more and more people to your team, you can't do everything. And so having those really, you know, foundational people on your team to help you do that. And I know you've met several of the ones that I have, but in particular, Ashlyn has come with me to Linda Gather a few times. And she came into this business being my assistant when I did floral. And she did all those grueling floral proposals every day. And so she's really seen the good, the bad, and the ugly from the beginning. She leads a lot of the teams and she helps set those sales goals. I think just treating people the way you would want to be treated. And realizing, hey, you know, when we're in that mode of we've got to work hard and work late today, everybody's a team player. And then when you have the chance to relax, then everybody gets to take a minute, take a breath, you know, catch their breath. So
tell me a little bit about how you handle some of the things that I think lead to the most burnout for people in this industry, right? Because you start thinking, okay, I get to make pretty things all the time. And then you recognize I'm kind of running a glorified moving company, right? And so, so I think some of the things that really burn people out are last minute changes. How do you guys handle those there at Prop House when a planner calls and says, oh, you can't deliver at 10, you have to deliver at noon? What do you guys do?
You can hear down the office hallway when you know something has gone sideways. You know, and you just have to sort of, I mean, the best way is you just have to make it work. I mean, you got to do it with a smile on your face. I think we have really great customer service. Our clients do too. To have repetitive business, you have to try to keep those people happy. And maybe that's something that's not in their control. You know, maybe the tent company wasn't able to get the tent up the day they thought they were. So it sends everybody after that a day behind. You know, for me, it's just explaining it to our team and being very transparent and being like, hey, man, I know I'm sorry that this pickup was at 10 o'clock, but now it's at midnight. And the best way I can work with you is maybe you're not going to unload the truck that night when you get back. And we'll save that for the next day. So I think it's just really learning, you know, here's the situation. There's not really much you can do about it. You got to handle it and try to make the best of it on the other side.
Do you feel like over the years you've tried to give yourself margin or you've increased your pricing in order to sort of stave off any of the fallout from those kinds of things? Or do you feel like you've always kind of padded enough that you feel like, okay, we're good?
Probably in the beginning, I didn't. But I think as the company's grown and we've added more salespeople to the team, I think you do have to have some of that cushion in place because you are doing more orders and more things are going to go wrong. It's inevitable. You're going to have changes happen. And so we do pad a little extra here and there for delivery or something like that, knowing that, you know, this may be a difficult client, difficult delivery, however you want to, when you want to put it on your invoicing. But I think, you know, you definitely have to be cognizant of that because you will start eating into your actual rental income versus like your delivery income. So, and we do try to pad it just a little bit.
It's interesting to me to see the domino effect that sometimes these kind of last minute changes have, or things like no call, no shows have on businesses, that maybe when you're smaller, you don't experience them at all because you have these two really trusty delivery guys. But then the larger you get, the more people you have, the less control maybe you have on your staff. So are there problems that you feel like you face now that you have a staff of 30 that you didn't face when you had a staff of 5?
I think it's really just realizing that when you have a staff like that, you're always going to have someone who's off. You're always going to have requests off sitting in your inbox. You're always going to have last minute things. Oh, my child is sick. I can't come in today. I think kind of what we've learned is we almost have one or two more people that it takes to do it than we actually need, because you're always going to have someone who's falling short somewhere. I had a set of 3 sales team people, and they weren't able to get the orders out fast enough. We weren't able to turn around the proposals quick enough. And it was hurting us because, you know, people, when they want it now. They want to know before they go down the street and say, how much is yours to rent? And so we quickly saw that was really becoming a big issue as we got larger. And so we hired on assistants to every one of the sales team. So there's 2 of them for every pair of a team. And so, you know, whoever got to the email first to be able to respond, we were on it. We can kick out proposals. The assistants can prep it and they can turn it out and get it on. And so with that, you know, it kind of leans back to if somebody's sick or out of town or on vacation, then their assistant can step in.
You have fail safes.
Yes, yes. And we do that on the warehouse side too. You know, we always try to have, you know, enough delivery team to be able to handle everything. If somebody falls short, we usually have 1 or 2 people that are kind of on call, which are usually the managers or the salesperson who that was their original order. So there's a few safety nets and fallbacks there to be able to kind of pick the pieces up internally.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because on the one hand, sometimes you feel like, oh, sometimes I'm not busy enough to be able to afford those safety nets, right? But then you get to a point where you have to have those safety nets. So there's a little bit of a volume problem, right? Sometimes you're not big enough, but you need them but you have to be big enough in order to afford them. Do you feel like there was a sweet spot where you felt like, okay, once we hit X number of events or X number in revenue, that's when I felt like, okay, we were really comfortable in being able to have those kind of safety nets in place?
As the company has opened up other avenues, such as like the custom painting department or the custom building department, those people in their own right had their own job, but they were also treated as a safety net in case of any issues. And so really just having a company with that many staff internally, no matter if that's their job or not, I think the important part was just everybody being cross-trained.
So you're not calling your brother-in-law and your cousin and your cousin's friend's friend.
Right.
At yes. midnight on a Saturday yeah. because you're stuck in a ditch.
That's right. And I'm not on Facebook, you know, saying, hey, I need help this weekend. You know what I mean? I really try to draw the line of from the outside, you know, client facing, we look like we got it all together. If we're scrambling on the inside, that's for us to know. And I think we have enough staff now with all those different areas to be able to jump in when it's needed to jump in. So,
yeah. So it's interesting. Those additional services don't just provide you additional revenue streams. They have a secondary benefit of giving you those safety nets or larger pools of people to depend on when you are in that pinch or in an emergency or need somebody to shift quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've made deliveries one day where it's like, oh my gosh, we forgot this, or it got left off the truck and we're 2 hours away. We'll call up somebody in our custom paints department. Hopefully they're on task and on timely manner of target. And they can be like, hey, yeah, we can run those down there to you, you know? So it really is nice to be able to have that pool to pull from. Absolutely. It's definitely an advantage that I don't think a lot of people think of until you're in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your collection. It's quite extensive. It includes everything from lounge furnitures to bars and rugs, macrame, architectural pieces, lanterns, votives, lighting, draping, an Elvis cutout, multiple poodle statues, a Da Vinci bust, 8 14-foot dogwood trees, a shark backdrop, marquee letters, and on and on and on. I bet if I named a random object, you would say, we've got it. But Mandy,
so.
Tell me a little bit more about your collection. If you were to describe what you rent, what would you say?
It's definitely our standard would be lounge, bar rentals, bar backdrops. For what we have locally, we do a lot of local things. Like we have a large Magic City sign, which is sort of a Birmingham trademark. We have a Vulcan statue, which is a Birmingham trademark. There's a little bit of a method to the madness of what the collection is when you put it in its own terms. We do a lot for universities and mascots. So some are elephants, some are tigers, some are bulldogs. And so we have some of those supplemental things that we can add in for photo ops or something like that. That's how we've gotten some of the random things. And then some of it is just really for conversation. I mean, there's nothing like walking into a warehouse and being like, you have a British leather sofa. We only have one of those, but people comment about it. And so I do get a few things here and there that are just interesting and start the conversation. And like when we have an Elvis, right, if we have an Elvis cutout or a showgirls cutout, we did that for a particular event that they requested. And we were like, well, we'll keep them in-house. I mean, who doesn't want to stand behind an Elvis statue or showgirl statue, right? For a photo backdrop. So, you know, we do have some of those things that are quite crazy requests that we have obliged to entertain. And it was perfect for the event and we didn't have to keep it in inventory, but it was some of those fun things. But I definitely would say, you know, we do a lot of custom build, a lot of custom painting. And so we do have quite an extensive selection of bars and stage facade that allow us to make it very customizable.
Well, how do you decide what to add to your collection, whether it's a piece that you're purchasing or a piece that you're custom building?
A lot of times, some of it has to do with client request. So, you know, if we have one order who is spending $65,000 in rentals and they want two green benches, then I'm going to oblige and buy these two green benches and add them to inventory because I'm not going to tell that person, no, we're not going to do that. So a lot of the inventory gets added that way. Another way is our planners, repetitive client, wedding planners, bring in inspo from their clients and say, my client really wants this champagne wall. And we have three other champagne walls, but this is the one they want. And so we price it out, say, hey, this is how much it's going to cost. And if they want it, then we'll be happy to build it. If they, we retain it in inventory afterwards. But we definitely, if it's a one of kind that we're doing for them, then cost and some profit is, you know, priced out in the initial rental of that. And it debuts at their event. And then so the other mark is just that, you know, I go to market, I go shopping, I do a little bit of trend research. And there's some things that I buy just because I personally think this will do well in the market, or someone doesn't have it to offer where we are. And so that gives us a leg up sometimes of something different that we have that can kind of be that little pivot point as to somebody tipping the scale to rent from us versus someone else.
You mentioned the volume that you have, 12 of one couch, or, you know, groupings of things. How do you decide how many is enough?
You never have enough, ever. Never have enough. It's funny you ask that, because when I started out, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to have, you know, the two of these, and this
right.
is great.
Two, I need two sofas. Two of these white couches. I mean, that'll
I
be
can
amazing.
Make it happen. And then, you know, as we started to add more, you know, my planners would say, oh, well, I want, you know, this side of the ballroom to have two sofas and this side of the ballroom to have two sofas. So I want it to mirror on each side of the dance floor. It's like, okay, well, then I really need to start buying fours. Well, then when you do that, you realize, oh, if one gets damaged, I've got three sofas that aren't good anymore because everybody wants them in sets of four. So then you say, okay, I'm gonna buy in five, right? I'm gonna buy an odd number, because then you have a backup. And the way we are now, our showroom is separate than our warehouse, and so, you know, we try to keep one in the showroom if we can. And so I always have that one extra, which is our backup in case something happens. And then it just depends, you know, banquettes, people want four-sided banquettes. Well, you have to have, you know, four, then you have eight, and then you want an extra. So that's nine. So it just compounds. It just does after a while. And you're just like, you know what? Every banquette I buy, we're buying like 13 of them. So we have 12 and a backup, because you never have enough.
Yeah. So I think you really are right that you can never have enough, because the minute you do, one goes missing or gets a rip or gets a stain. Yeah. Or
you get to a point and you know, you buy something and maybe that manufacturer doesn't make it anymore. Or, you know, my horror is to order the first time and get this run of fabric, and then when I reorder the same thing, it's a different run of fabric. And so they don't match when they come in. So it's just, If it can happen, it has happened. And so I have learned from the hard knock lessons of purchasing that you can't, it's hard to get it right every time. But if you do buy an enough quantity, you probably can get there for a while.
Yeah. What is your budgeting process like for purchasing?
Like I said, a lot of it that is custom build or a custom purchase for someone will depend on the client who's ordering it. So I don't really factor that in necessarily when it comes to our overall. We have $300,000 a year to buy new inventory. It's not necessarily set as cut and dried as that, and I don't go past it. I think it really ebbs and flows with seasonal things, how much we're getting rid of versus how much we're retaining, because we do a prop sell a couple of times a year. Where we do, you know, sell off some of our slightly damaged inventory or things that literally just don't move anymore.
What have been some of your most successful purchases?
When I first started and I really like dove into, I'm like, I'm going to get some lounge because I need some lounge. I bought some pieces, and, you know, before you have all the connections of the best places to buy things or the best bargains to get, I bought them from Ballard Designs. So I paid a lot of money for them when I first got them. And we still have them in our inventory 11 years later. The frame of the sofas are wonderful. They're still going. The fabric has been through a lot. We've cleaned it out to the point where I don't think we can clean it anymore. So we're about to have them reupholstered. but I think it's just looking at, you know, the life of what the item is. Is it worth getting it reupholstered because the frame is still good or it's a popular shape, you know, versus then just deciding to get rid of that in the sale and add new inventory to the market.
Yeah, you have quite a few unique or one-of-a-kind pieces. Where are you doing your buying? Are you just out shopping? Are you on the hunt all the time? Are you an auction hunter? Are you an antiquer? Or are you going to shows?
When it started out, I loved an antique store, loved an auction. And I think that was great when you just were looking for one piece, right? And that's how I think most rental companies start out, is like the love of the thrill of the hunt. And I was definitely in that position. But I think as I really got into the big event world of doing a lot of corporate, then you needed the number. So you couldn't shop at those places like that for that kind of stuff. But I still love the antique stores, and I still love to find those one-of-a-kind things that I think is an interesting ad. So for the most part, I mean, to answer your question, yeah, the antique stores still happen, obviously. But definitely going to market, Atlanta, Las Vegas, different ones, High Point, to see, you know, what's trending and what's new and coming.
Yeah. Over the years, have you had challenges with storage?
Oh, we do every day. Yeah.
Tell me about some of your challenges with storage.
It's funny you say that, because we're kind of at a benchmark now where we're about to get growing pains again, and we're looking to move into, hopefully, either build onto the location we have now or completely buy a new facility that has more space. I think the difficulty is really learning that after you have so many things on the ground, you have to go more vertical with everything. And I think storing it that way, training your staff to be able to drive forklifts, you know, different things to be able to get the inventory off the shelf. So I think yes, we're always in growing pains when it comes to space, but I think really using vertical space is an important thing.
I've noticed that you don't have dining tables and dining chairs in your collection. Is there a reason that you've chosen not to invest in those things?
The easy answer to that is just because a lot of the people around me, that's what they have. Also, when we're already running out of space with our custom build and our lounge collections, that was one segment that I didn't feel like I needed to dive into, because I knew what a space taker-upper it was. I mean, I knew it just eats the space. And so I really shied away from the tables, unless it's a cake table or a specialty table. And then we just recently, as probably in the last few months, bought a couple of dining chairs in quantity. In quantity, I say like 100, because I've just made a promise to everyone. We would never carry a Shivari chair, because, you know, people want 600, 700 of those. And if I told my guys that I have working for me that they had to line up 600 Shivari chairs for a ceremony setting and get them just perfectly lined, they would look at me probably like I have two heads. And so I'm just like, no. To keep them happy, to keep me happy, we're the home of no Shivari chairs.
Well, I mean, it's good to know the limits of your team. It sounds like you've got a pretty amazing staff. What have you done to maintain your collection so that it lasts as long as possible?
We try to take care of it. And I think trying to teach our team about how to be respectful of the inventory, I try to hire individuals and retain them. So I don't use temp agencies for busy weekends and things, because I think when you start introducing people who don't work with the product all the time, they're not as careful or delicate or don't wrap it appropriately. So we do try to, you know, on deliveries, pack the trucks with the blankets and the straps and do the procedure that we're supposed to. And then when it comes back in, obviously using the proper, you know, cleaning techniques, we spot clean our furniture, vacuum it in-house. But if it does have major stains or something, we have partnered with a cleaning company here in town that comes and does deep cleaning of our lounge and things like that. So I think just being able to invest a little bit into the taking care of the inventory really will give it some longevity.
How do you get your team members, the last one to touch it, to care about that as much as you do?
That's a hard question, I think, because we do some training, obviously, and you tell people what you want it to look like and what your expectations are. Now, whether they do that in the field or not when you're not looking, I don't know. But we do have a few areas of ways that we entertain the fact of trying to make sure everyone is doing part of that job. If we know we have a difficult planner or difficult client, we will make sure that we send a member of the sales team there to make sure they're doing a final approval of what it looks like, to make sure everything is appropriate. Our guys are really, really good, though. I mean, I have to really sing their praises, because, you know, I'm real particular about when we put pillows out on furniture, zippers always go down. And, you know, there's nothing better than getting a note from a planner and they text you on Saturday afternoon about 3 o'clock. And they're like, I can't believe that Will just made sure all the zippers were down on the pillows. Like, this is amazing. And when you share that with those guys, like, they love to know that people appreciate that. And I think it's definitely sharing that successes with them when they're getting compliments and things like that.
It's interesting because sometimes you're hiring somebody because they're strong or enthusiastic or are willing to work at 3 a.m., right? Those are characteristics that are not usually the same as somebody who cares about a zipper going down, right? Or something being aesthetically pleasing in the same kind of way, right? They're not always aligned values.
That's right.
But when you're able to say, hey, this is what this client cares about, and they're able to internalize that, that can be a really powerful motivator for them to recognize, like, oh, okay, I can really make a difference here.
Absolutely. And when we pair our delivery teams together, we're pairing them appropriately to that end result. So we may send 2 strong muscle guys, but we send 1 girl to make sure details are happening. Or we send 2 muscle guys and a guy who's really savvy with a drill who has to hang signs or do certain on-site installations. So we really pick the delivery teams based on what's needed for each event. And I think it's really worked out in our favor.
Well, it seems like you've gotten to a point where you have that luxury. I know a lot of people who will be listening to this podcast are thinking, I send whoever will respond to my text that they're available. Okay. And right. I imagine you've had those days, right? You've been through that season.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And for me, a lot of it was, oh, I need to learn how to work a drill. And I need to make sure I know how to do those things because I was the one out there doing it too. The time will come when you get there, you realize, hey, it's worth the extra labor or the extra, you know, qualifications you're looking for that position to be able to be trusting of that person that the job is going to get done and done well.
Well, if you could go back and tell your past self 2 things before starting Prop House, what would they be? Are there 2 lessons that stand out to you that you think would have made a difference as you started?
I wish I knew how to be a better interviewer for a job.
Okay.
Is there
a formula now that you have?
I mean, not necessarily a formula, but there are things that we do depending on where they are in the business. For instance, our sales team, you know, I want to make sure that they have somewhat creativity because that's what they're selling is something in creative market. And so if they make it through the first round of interviews and they come to the second round, the idea actually came from Anthropology, but I get them to bring a box with 5 things that represents them and they get to tell me about them because we all know like an interview process, people are very like rigid and you ask them a question and they're going to answer it and stop talking. You know what I mean? Like they're very nervous. So to have something like that, that's an icebreaker that they can talk about, you know, this is a picture of my, you know, dad when we were fishing. I love fishing. They tell you so many things about them that you don't know to even ask about. And so that's been interesting to learn people's, you know, characteristics of maybe if they would be a good fit with the team. Definitely hiring the right staff is imperative. And I think the second thing is that as an entrepreneur growing in a growing business, you have to learn what it feels like to kind of take your emotions out of things a little bit. And when you have to let someone go or fire them, you know, you have all the reasons and you have everything behind your decision that you made. And so the blow is a little bit less, maybe even be expected on the other end from the people at that point. But to really realize that when it's time to cut ties and move on and hire the right person for the position, no matter if they're a friend.
What brings you joy right now in your business?
Being able to have the luxury of having a little extra income to be able to share it with people and give back the way I would have liked to have been given the opportunity. And it's not always just monetary. Maybe it's the chance. Somebody takes a chance on you to really step up and take on this client, or, you know, somebody getting married and you're able to give them a nice gift because they dedicate a lot of time and effort to your business. Because there was a day where I didn't even get a paycheck, right? As the company, I was reinvesting and buying new vases and all those kind of things. And then you get to a point to where it's like you have the opportunity to give back. And I think for me personally, bringing me joy is being able to give back to the people who I think dedicate themselves so much to the business, the crazy business that we're in.
Sounds like you really spread the Majeric magic. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so grateful. Thank you for sharing all of your wisdom and all of the wonderful things you've learned along the way. We are so grateful.
Absolutely.
A big thank you to Mandy Majeric of Prop House Rentals and Styling. You can find all her info in the show notes. And a big thank you for listening to The Trunk Show, brought to you by RW Elephant, mighty inventory management software designed to help you conquer the chaos in your event rental business and reclaim your creativity. Because the world needs more of the beautiful events and environments you create. We hope you enjoyed the show. We're releasing episodes every other week, so be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app. As always, I'm your host, Allison Howell. Happy renting!